In fact, if you combine us and Venezuela, we have about 62% of the world's oil market. So we don't need straits. We don't need anything. We don't need the Hormuz Strait, but we do it because we have to do it, because we cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon. It's very simple.
This is my video update on this Thursday afternoon, July the 23rd, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news, and we have a lot of news to get to today. And we are going to start things off with some breaking news, which is that the EU has approved the 21st sanctions package. Success for Stunning and Brave, success for Vander Caesar. The 21st sanctions package has finally been approved. It was a struggle to get this one over the finish line. A lot of EU member states were asking for exemptions and carve-outs, and the EU had to give out those exemptions and carve-outs. The sanctions package is very much watered down. The European Union had to take a lot of L's in order to finally get this sanctions package approved, but we made it. We got to lucky number 21, the sanctions package that will finally bring down the Russian government and bring down the Putin war machine. Sanctions package number 21, because the European Union, what they have been doing all these years is they have been working towards it's been a slow buildup. That's what they've been working towards. Sanctions package 21, a very slow, calculated, deliberate, strategic buildup. Sanctions package after sanctions package after sanctions package after sanctions package after sanctions package. All in an effort to get to sanctions package 21, which is the big enchilada. This is the sanctions package that will crush Putin, crush Russia. Sanctions package number 21. But the EU had to give up a lot of ground in order to pass sanctions package number 21. They had to give in to Greece's LNG demands. Greece got an exemption. They had to give it to Portugal and their fishery demands. The fish, said Kaya Kallas last week. The fish. They cause such geopolitical problems, those fish, said Stunning and Brave. But Portugal won. Greece won. The EU gave in to Austria's demands as well, losing money on sanctions in the banking sector and on Raiffeisen. And Austria also got their demands met. And a lot of exemptions and carve-outs from Stunning and Brave to various EU member states in order to approve this 21st sanctions package, which is built upon the 44 euro price cap on Russian oil. That is the foundation of these sanctions. They're going to sanction Russian banks and go after shadow fleets and stuff like that. But really, this sanctions package is about the 44 euro price cap, holding on to that 44 euro price cap, which will cause Russia all kinds of economic troubles and will hurt Putin's budget, his war machine funding. Because Russia is going to have to find alternative markets outside of the European Union, and the 44 euro price cap on Russian oil. This is going to cause all kinds of problems for the Kremlin as they try to figure out, in a time of an oil shortage, in a time of an energy shortage, in a time where you have a war in the Middle East and you have the Strait of Hormuz shut down, possibly the Al-Mandab Strait also shut down, the Kremlin is going to have to figure out who is going to want to buy our oil. It's going to be a very, very difficult situation for the Kremlin. Where to sell the oil during a time of an energy shortage? Where to sell that oil? Or are we going to be forced to go with the 44 euro price cap? Just can't find any countries willing to purchase our oil. So we're just going to have to play along with the 44 euro price cap. Yeah, so Putin is probably holding emergency meetings right now in the Kremlin, trying to figure out how to sell Russian oil at a time of an energy shortage, at a time when China is about to ramp up their imports of oil. It's going to be a tough one for the Kremlin. But something tells me they'll figure this one out. Something tells me that they will be able to circumvent, to navigate through the 44 euro price cap. I don't know. Something just tells me that right now, at this moment in time, the Kremlin will find an answer to this 21st sanctions package. Anyway, that's the big news from the European Union. And Lavrov met with Rubio, also big news, in Manila on the sidelines of the ASEAN summit. The meeting was called by the United States. Rubio wanted to meet with Lavrov. The meeting lasted a total of 35 minutes. That's it. That's got to tell you something. A meeting between the Secretary of State of the United States and the Russian Foreign Minister lasting only 35 minutes. There was no press conference before the meeting. There was no press conference after the meeting. So we don't have too many details as to what was discussed. Lavrov said that, or the foreign ministry said that Lavrov brought up the topic of weapons to Ukraine. And he said that that sending weapons to Ukraine, arming Ukraine with Western weapons is a quote, unacceptable. That's the one statement from the Russian foreign ministry and from Lavrov that we have. Rubio posted on X. Let me pull it up. Rubio said, met today with Russian foreign minister Lavrov on the sidelines of the ASEAN ministerial. We discussed the U.S.-Russia relationship and the need to end the Russia-Ukraine war. That's all we pretty much have to go off of from the Rubio U.S. side of things. So 35 minutes. The excuse that they're using for the 35-minute length of the meeting is that the Secretary of State and the Foreign Minister of Russia, they had to end the meeting after 35 minutes because they had planes to catch, travel itinerary. So it had to be limited to 35 minutes. They have to go through baggage check-in and customs and security. So, you know, they need some time. They need a couple of hours to get to the airport. They need some time to get to the airport. Then they need about 2 hours at the airport before their flight. So, you know, the meeting had to be 35 minutes. We've been there. We understand, right? We understand. No, 35 minutes means that the meeting did not go well. And my sense of things is that Rubio called this meeting. Now, keep in mind that Rubio is still the NSA head, right? He's still the intelligence head. So he's not only the Secretary of State, he's also in charge of intel. And I think he wanted to call this meeting because of, this is no coincidence at all, this is all deliberate, because of the Reuters article, which dropped yesterday or today, which claims that Russia is, or did help Iran hit CIA targets back in March, because the strikes on the CIA targets in March were very precise. They hit the targets, the CIA targets, they did damage. And according to U.S. intel, they're investigating everything now to see if Russia really was behind this. So they're running an investigation, according to Reuters. But the thinking is that that only Russia would have been able to provide this type of targeting data to Iran in order to hit with such precision, these CIA targets. And this is back in March. This is round two of the U.S. Iran war. And so that article drops from Reuters, and you have Rubio in Manila with Lavrov there, and he calls a meeting, and Rubio, wearing his NSA intel hat, probably tells Lavrov to knock it off. Yeah. He probably told Lavrov, stop supporting Iran. We have this intelligence, which shows that you are helping Iran target CIA targets, target CIA facilities, and we're telling you to stop it or else. That's 35 minutes right there. 5 minutes of introductions and then 30 minutes of that. And I'm sure that Lavrov's answer was, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about, Lavrov said. And then he probably followed it up with, well, since we're talking about helping Assad during a conflict, let's talk about the CIA in the United States helping Ukraine hit Russian targets. Let's talk about CIA facilities in Ukraine. Let's talk about the CIA covert war against Russia. Let's talk about Budanov and Ukraine military intel and the SBU folded under the CIA. Starlink, Palantir, drones into Valdai at the Russian president's residence, targeting and data for drone strikes and missile strikes at Russian refineries, online retailer warehouses, etc., 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 right? The list goes on and on and on for 4 years, for 5 years. And I'm not even getting into Maidan and coups and stuff like that. But that's the 35-minute meeting right there. What will Rubio cook up when he goes back to the United States in order to escalate against Russia? Because you know that's coming. The CIA and the NSA and Rubio, they're going to go back to D.C. He's going to fly back to D.C. and they're going to figure out ways to retaliate and escalate against Russia. And it's going to be through Project Ukraine. What they're going to think up, who knows? They don't have weapons. We know that. The United States is running very low on weapons, and whatever weapons they do have, they go to the war in the Middle East against Iran. We know that the money is also running low. We know that as well, because I talked about that yesterday, the $400 million that was earmarked for Project Ukraine is now being pushed back to 2029. So you have to wonder, what is the retaliation going to be? It'll be CIA covert stuff, probably. Stuff like that. Anyway, that's the meeting between Lavrov and Rubio. That's my guess as to what was discussed and how things went down. Just a guess, but when you combine the timing of the Reuters article and a 35-minute meeting, Rubio, Secretary of State, but also NSA head, it's about Iran. It's about Iran and Russian intel to Iran. And I'm sure they talked a little bit about Project Ukraine, fine. But anyway, that is the other big story for today. Peskov gave a press conference, and he was asked about the new Ukraine commander and what effect that will have on the SMO. And Peskov said it will have zero effect on the conflict. Doesn't matter who is commanding Ukraine. It will not make a difference, according to Peskov, in the outcome of the special military operation. Peskov also confirmed that Witkoff and Kushner will be traveling to Moscow, and the date will be announced fairly soon, very soon, a date will be announced as to when Witkoff and Kushner will be traveling to Moscow. Zelensky also spoke to Witkoff and Kushner as well. Zelensky posted about this on social media, and he said that he spoke via phone to Witkoff and Kushner about resuming negotiations with regards to the conflict in Ukraine. But I had hope that Lavrov was starting to take things over with regards to negotiations. It was going to move through the foreign ministry and under the control of Lavrov, but Peskov, he once again started to talk about the whole Witkoff-Kushner thing. Talk about I can't quit you. Talking about I can't quit you. Russia just cannot quit Witkoff and Kushner. They just cannot quit those two. Anyway, Peskov was also asked about the Bloomberg article that talked about Putin hardening his position when it comes to territorial concessions. And Peskov, he walked all of that back. Yeah, he said that, and he's correct in this statement. In the one statement, he said that Bloomberg doesn't have any sources in the Kremlin. He's correct about that, because Bloomberg was talking about how their sources in the Kremlin and in Moscow have told them that Putin is hardening his position when it comes to territorial concessions, and Putin is going to create a buffer zone in Sumy and Kharkov. This is all stuff, by the way, that Ushakov talked about a couple of months ago, when he put out a statement after a Putin-Trump phone call that Putin told Trump that the situation with regards to territory is going to harden. So this has been documented from 2-3 months ago. I think that Bloomberg is just taking that Ushakov statement from 2-3 months ago from a phone call with Putin and Trump, and they're repackaging it. But Peskov decided to say that actually the deal that is on the table, not, I don't know why he said this, is Istanbul Plus, June 2024. That is 2 years ago at the foreign ministry. That is the deal that Putin talked about during his speech to the foreign ministry. That is the deal that is on the table, according to Peskov. He went 2 years back and he said, that's the deal. Those are the terms. And everyone knows that those are the terms. I don't know why he went there. He could have just come out with a statement and said, look, Bloomberg, they have no sources inside the Kremlin, so forget about that. But Putin has spoken with Trump, and Putin has made his terms with regards to territory clear to Trump during the last phone call. He could have said something like that. That would have been awesome, perfect, done. Instead, he had to say, well, actually, the terms are from 2 years ago, Istanbul Plus. Those are the terms. Okay. Okay, Peskov. I did not understand that at all. But anyway, that was his statement. And the media is talking a lot about the new commander of Ukraine. They are spinning quite a tall tale with regards to Mr. Drapati, Mikhail Drapati, who is taken over for Sirsky. The Collective West Media, they are really talking him up. They're really trying to spin this as some sort of a positive. Going through two military commanders, and now you're on your third military commander, in the middle of a war, they're trying to spin this into some sort of amazing strategic positive move from the Zelensky regime. And the way they're justifying this, the way they're talking about this, is that that Drapati is a younger, fresher face. They're done with the old traditional Sirsky and the dependence on artillery and troops and stuff like that. And they're now moving in a different, younger, fresher direction with robotics and drones and Terminators and stuff like that. Yeah, CNN is writing about this. Bloomberg is talking about this. It's a fresher, younger, more future-focused military with Draghi in charge. It's just ridiculous, man. CNN has an article with the title, Why a Week of Protests Pushed Zelensky to Bring in a Younger Military Chief. And Bloomberg says, in firing the top commander, Zelensky chose Ukraine's future over its past. So you see, it's a positive. That's what winning is all about. It's a positive to fire another military commander when you're in the middle of a conflict. That's the smart thing to do, right? That's what winning is all about, right, Alexander Stoop? You gotta fire your military commanders, cycle through military commanders during a war, because that's how you win. Anyway, that is CNN and Bloomberg. The interesting thing is that in the CNN article, as they're building up Trapati and the young, fresh look, the fresh face of Ukraine's military command, Trapati is 43 years old, and they paint Syrsky as an old and tired commander, Trapati as a young, energetic commander. The CNN article continuously references the shortage of Ukrainian troops, which I found very interesting. They talk about how Ukraine is winning, how Ukraine is turning the tide, how this new fresh face of the Ukraine command and the Ukraine military, focused on drones and robots and automation, is delivering surprising results. But they always reference in the article how Ukraine is running short on troops. Ukraine has robots, it has drones, it has automation, but it's running low on soldiers. That is what the CNN article says, like 3-4 times in that article. It reveals that Ukraine has a troop shortage problem. So it was an interesting admission from CNN. As they try to spin this as a positive, they actually reveal the catastrophic reality of the situation on the ground in Ukraine. Ukraine is calling for a Security Council meeting over Russia hitting grain ships and blockading Odessa. Isn't that something, huh? Ukraine just 2 weeks ago was cheering the success of hitting Russian grain ships. That was 2 weeks ago. 40 ships, 100 ships, 150 ships. I've read some reports which say 168 Russian ships, most of them wheat and grain ships, were hit by Ukrainian drones in the Sea of Azov. And this is a huge victory. And when Russia decides to retaliate and to blockade Odessa and to go after ships, some of them carrying grain, some of them carrying weapons, according to Russian officials, the Ukrainians run to the Security Council to complain. We started this, but now that Russia is retaliating, we want the Security Council to do something. Okay. Maersk has stopped shipping to Ukraine. That's big news. Maersk is a big shipping company, but they are now stopping their activity in Ukraine because of the costs and the risks. As predicted, Zelensky, he said that Putin's inner circle is signaling to us and our partners that they understand Putin himself is the reason the war is not ending, and only Putin is responsible for the losses Russia is suffering. This is what Zelensky said in his video statement, his TikTok message from yesterday. So we have a Putin inner circle that is signaling to Zelensky that Putin is the problem. Okay, yeah, that's real. Absolutely. That happened. Putin's inner circle is communicating with Le Goblin Ver. Okay, whatever. Whatever, bro. Anyway, that's all of the Project Ukraine news. Quite a lot to get through today. Let's talk about the Trump-Saudi nuclear deal. Big news from from yesterday, the announcement. I talked about this a couple of days ago, that that Trump has signed off on Saudi Arabia uranium enrichment, and Saudi Arabia working with the United States for civilian nuclear energy. But the agreement cuts out the IAEA, which is very worrying, because the only safeguard or guardrails in this agreement going forward are U.S. Inspections, U.S. monitoring. The international organization under Mr. Grossi, Rafael Grossi, a name that I forgot yesterday, they will not be involved in this cooperation, in this agreement between the United States and Saudi Arabia, which is very odd, because the U.S. did a similar deal, I believe, with the UAE, and the IAEA is involved in monitoring that nuclear project. But in the case of Saudi Arabia, they have been sidelined. The New York Times is reporting Saudis reached deal with the U.S. that could let them enrich nuclear fuel. U.S. lawmakers and Israeli officials have expressed opposition to such a plan to be announced Wednesday, fearing that the kingdom could use a civilian nuclear project to develop nuclear weapons. You know, this project was actually, this deal has been in the works since the Biden administration. So Biden was trying to put this deal together, also sidelining the IAEA, but Trump is the one that brought it home. The fear was that during the Biden administration, and even now with the Trump administration, was that if the United States did not agree to all of Saudi Arabia's terms with regards to this nuclear enrichment deal, then China would come in and they would take the business. And so the U.S. decided to go along with whatever Saudi Arabia demanded. And we have this nuclear deal signed and delivered. And this could lead, if Saudi Arabia does decide to go underground and work towards a nuclear weapon, which is something that Saudi Arabia has wanted. I believe they have hinted at it. Could be wrong about that, but the fear is that Saudi Arabia will decide, given everything that is happening now in the Middle East, that it's to their benefit to go nuclear. No one's going to really be monitoring this. At least no international organizations or institutions will be monitoring what's going on. And what this will do is that this will lead to nuclear proliferation in the region. Saudi Arabia, then Turkey, and things will spiral out of control, and the entire region will nuke up. And sticking with Saudi Arabia, we have the Houthis now officially enforcing the naval blockade. They hit a couple of Saudi tankers in the Red Sea yesterday with missiles and drones. Where is Russia going to sell all of that oil now that you have the Red Sea, the Helmandab closing down? Where is Russia going to sell that oil? EU checkmates. Anyway, the Houthis are now enforcing their blockade. And when it comes to the war with Iran, Trump posted on Truth Social, from this point forward, anytime the Islamic Republic of Iran shoots at a ship in the Strait of Hormuz, whether it be by missile, rocket, drone, or other device or weapon, the United States will bomb and destroy one bridge or power plant, including those located next to or in the capital city of Tehran. Thank you for your attention to this matter. So the United States has already blown up three bridges or four bridges, as well as water facilities. And now the Trump threat is that with every tanker that is hit,
a bridge will be blown up and Tehran will be targeted. Targeting Tehran is a big escalation. Iran's response to this Trump threat coming from Ghalibaf is that if Iran is unable to sell its oil, then no one will sell oil. The equation of this war is clear, either all or none. In a region where we do not sell oil, no one will sell oil. If our security is not ensured, no infrastructure will be safe, and the security of the Strait is in the absence of American forces. We have repeatedly said that the situation of the Strait will not return to pre-war conditions. That is Ghalibaf. All or none. And Araghchi's response was an eye for an eye. The foreign minister said that Iran's defense doctrine is clear, eye for eye. Any aggression against Iran, including our infrastructure, will compel a powerful and decisive response. Those who contribute to such aggression, whatever the kind of support, will also be considered as legitimate targets. So Trump was speaking in Georgia, and he called the war in Iran a skirmish. That's right, it's just a skirmish. Not even an excursion. It used to be an excursion. Now it's just a skirmish, according to Trump. We have a skirmish with the Islamic Republic of Iran, he said. They are getting hit so hard, they want to make a deal. But I say they are not ready to make a deal. They are not ready to make a deal. They will be ready very soon. Trump also went on to say at the during the same event that we don't need straits. The United States doesn't need straits. We don't need anything. We don't need the Hormuz Strait because we do it because we have to do it. We cannot let Iran have a nuclear weapon. A statement that makes absolutely no freaking sense. We don't need the Strait. Don't need it. But we're at war for it. We don't need it, but we're in a war for the Strait of Hormuz. And we can't let Iran get a nuclear weapon. What does the one have to do with the other? Nothing. The Iran nuclear weapon has nothing to do with the Strait of Hormuz. Hormuz has nothing to do with the whole Iran uranium enrichment. But the United States is now at war for Hormuz, which was open and free 3-4 months ago. And they cannot let Iran get a nuclear weapon, something that was being monitored by the JCPOA until Trump decided to scrap the JCPOA in his first term. So a statement from Trump that really doesn't make much sense. But anyway, that was his speech in Georgia. The United States yesterday in their airstrikes, they used a B-1 bomber, which is significant because this is the return of the B-1 in round 3 of the conflict. It was used in round 2 of the war with Iran, but now it has returned. This was the first use of the B-1 in round 3. And the B-1 took off from the airbase in the UK. The B-1 launched its mission from an airbase in the UK and was spotted on online plane tracking websites, according to Axios. So the UK is in. They are in this conflict now, no doubt about it. And before we get to so much news today, before we get to a clown world, we had the U.S. House passing the NDAA bill, which includes Section 219, which is the part of that defense bill, which merges the U.S. and Israeli military, and also merges U.S. and Israeli intel. They effectively merge together and they cooperate on a very, very deep level. It becomes official, and it's part of this bill. And going forward, if this is passed by the Senate, going forward, it's not going to really matter if a president decides to send money to Israel or something like that, because everything is now going to run out of the Pentagon, right? The $1.15 trillion was approved in this NDAA, and it's going to go up to $1.5 trillion. And now Israel is embedded. It's a part of the Pentagon, effectively, and the Pentagon is a part of the IDF. And so that was passed by the House. Thomas Massie posted on X, final vote for the NDAA today, which tragically merges our military technology and supply chains with Israel's. Let's hope this version fails in the Senate, because Section 219 is a betrayal of our sovereignty. Joe Kent said, unfortunately, the House just voted to merge the most secretive and sensitive elements of our defense and intelligence apparatus with a foreign government. The bill has to clear the Senate. That was Joe Kent. And we can now do some clown worlds. We'll do some quick clown worlds for today, because this has been a long news-packed video. There is a rumor that Zelensky will travel to the United States to attend Lindsey Graham's funeral, Le Gobelin Vert, at Lindsey Graham's funeral. Not surprised, but that's just a rumor. Has not been confirmed yet, but you know, Le Gobelin Vert, any opportunity that he can get to leave Kiev, he takes it. The rumor is coming from a member of the Ukraine parliament. They are saying that Le Gobelin Vert might attend Lindsey Graham's funeral in the United States. We have the Maduro trial, which is set for June 1st, 2027. U.S. drug trafficking case for Maduro. So we got less than a year for the Maduro trial to start up. And the Financial Times, they posted an article, an exclusive, where they say that the Trump administration has collected more than $13 billion in revenues from Venezuelan oil sales this year, according to FT calculations, but has said almost nothing about what has happened to the money. The U.S. has collected about $13 billion of Venezuela's oil money. Where is it? Asks the Financial Times. Where is it? Well, you tell us, Financial Times. Where is it? The last I heard about the Venezuelan oil, the Trump administration, with the approval of Congress, I believe they signed off on this, they created an account in, I want to say, in the UAE, either the UAE or Qatar, an offshore account where this oil was going to, where the money from this oil was going to be deposited. And it would be under the control of the executive. That's what I remember about Venezuela's oil, but I could be wrong. That's where the money is, if my memory serves me correct. Yeah. UAE or Qatar, some sort of an offshore account, and the money was going to end up there. And then the Trump administration would decide how much Venezuela gets, and I don't know what happens to the rest of that money. I don't know. You tell us, Financial Times. Anyway, as Trump was giving his speech in Georgia, I will leave on this note, on this video, he was giving his speech in Georgia. There was someone in back of Trump who was doing Trump impressions, his mannerisms, his his body language. There was a guy that was mocking Trump, like right in back of him. Check out the video. You'll see it in the video. At first, I thought this was AI, but apparently this is not AI. This really happened. This guy really was in back of Trump, you know, doing the Trump thing as Trump was speaking. Anyway, I'll leave you on that note. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merch. 26% off summer sale. Also check us out on Substack. I will see everybody tomorrow. Like, share, and smash that hype button. Also subscribe to this channel if you like this video. I will see everybody tomorrow.